she said, I really hate to give such attitude. Furthermore, I truly hope my social distance isn't rude. But I'll repeat myself at the risk of virus in my food. There must be 50 ways to catch corona. 50 ways to catch corona. You just go out to eat, Pete. Hang out at the pub, bub. Hands don't need to be clean, Gene. Hey, just listen to me. Breathe in the sneeze, Louise. Don't worry about that moist breeze. Just touch on your face, Grace. Share a ciggy with me. Oh, just go out to eat, Pete. Hang out at the pub, bub. Hands don't need to be clean, Gene. It's all cool, you see. Breathe in the sneeze, Louise. Don't worry about that moist breeze. Just touch on your face, Grace. Let's share this ice cream. She said it's all a hoax, that nasty infectious curve. And forget about this social distance if you have the nerve. I said, I appreciate your advice. But could you please explain about the 50 ways? She said, why don't we both just party hard tonight? No respirators needed anywhere in sight. And then she coughed into my mouth, and I knew that she was right. There must be 50 ways to catch corona. 50 ways to catch corona. You just go out to eat, Pete. Hang out at the pub, bub. Hands don't need to be clean, Gene. Hey, just listen to me. Breathe in the sneeze, Louise. Don't worry about that moist breeze. Just touch on your face, Grace. Share a ciggy with me. Oh, just go out to eat, Pete. Hang out at the pub, bub. Hands don't need to be clean, Gene. It's all cool, you see. Breathe in the sneeze, Louise. Don't worry about that moist breeze. Just touch on your face, Grace. Let's share this ice cream.
Then it says, okay, for real, friends, this is a very serious time in history. Please do the exact opposite of everything mentioned in this song. Parody version of lyrics by Dick Whitman and performed and recorded by Zach David at his makeshift apartment studio in March. Good job, Zach David. Hashtag stay home. Good stuff. Yeah. All right. There's your little song parody for the day. All right. So I got a lot of news to get to. Before we get there, you know, here we are. It's May 7th. When I think back, you know, I look at my calendar and I've got all these dates written down in here trying to figure out how long it's been, right? And I know March 22nd, we had already started, you know, staying at home. I was actually at that time just leaving home only on weekends to go to the animal shelter where I was volunteering every weekend until they shut it down. And the last day at the shelter was March 22nd. And by that time, I think we had already been in for about a week. So, and now here we are. It is, May 7th. And I was thinking about when we, you know, red flags were first raised about this. And, you know, Trump was trying to act like, you know, nothing to see here. It's a hoax. He used that very term. But there was one woman before we really, you know, before Dr. Fauci's name became a household name, there was a doctor who I believe was with the CDC who spoke up, and this was February 25th. Now, as we've since learned, the virus was probably here in December. But on February 25th was the first time that I realized just how deadly serious this was, because I heard this doctor, Dr. Nancy Messonnier, talking about the conversation she had with her little kids about how life is going to change. Do you remember this woman? Do you remember this statement?
Some community level interventions that may be most effective in reducing the spread of a new virus, like school closures, are also the most likely to be associated with unwanted consequences and further disruptions. Secondary consequences of some of these measures might include missed work and loss of income.
Yep.
I understand this whole situation may seem overwhelming and that disruption to everyday life may be severe, but these are things that people need to start thinking about now. I had a conversation with my family over breakfast this morning, and I told my children that while I didn't think that they were at risk right now, we as a family need to be preparing for significant disruption of our lives.
Wow.
You should ask your children's school about their plans for school dismissals or school closures. Ask if there are plans for teleschool. I contacted my local school superintendent this morning with exactly those questions. You should think about what you would do for childcare if schools or daycares close. Is teleworking an option for you? Does your healthcare provider offer a telemedicine option? All of these questions can help you be better prepared for what might happen.
Okay, so that was the first real warning we got about the seriousness of what was coming down the pike. Again, that was February 25th. That was Dr. Nancy Messonnier, who was an official at the Centers for Disease Control. And again, that statement, I thought, oh, really? Come on, our lives are going to be disrupted? What are you talking about? Well, hindsight, as they say, is 2020, right? So aren't you wondering what became of Dr. Nancy Messonnier? Because since February 25th, when she made that statement and issued that scary warning, we really haven't heard from her. We have Dr. Birx, we have Dr. Fauci, but what happened to this doctor? Well, from a story in The Hill from last month or so, let me just share with you, because I was thinking about her today going, she's the one who sounded the warning first, and where has she been? So check this out. Donald Trump nearly fired a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention official after she said in February that the agency was preparing for a pandemic. Quote, it's not a question of if this will happen, but when this will happen and how many people in this country will have severe illnesses, she said on February 25th, part of that statement. According to the Wall Street Journal, Trump was so angry with Messonnier after her statement resulted in a dip in the stock market. The same day, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said the virus was, quote, contained in the U.S. The next day, that would be February 26th, Trump repeatedly said that he didn't think an outbreak was inevitable. And that's the day that he allegedly appointed Mike Pence to be the head of the coronavirus task force. So let's see. Democrats have speculated that Trump was unhappy with Messonnier, who has not appeared at White House briefings since February. Ron Klain, who served as Obama's Ebola czar in 2014, said Messonnier faced, quote, immediate blowback for sounding the alarm about the coronavirus. And then, quote, starting the next day, Dr. Messonnier no longer appeared at public briefings of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. The president and the White House sent a clear message to scientists and the government, there would be a price for speaking out and speaking up. Wow. And now, of course, we know that Trump is unhappy with Fauci because he's been contradicting him on certain fronts. And that happened yesterday. So yesterday there was a event at the White House. I didn't flag the appropriate part of this video, but you've heard about it. Yesterday at the White House, it was National Nurses Appreciation Day or whatever they call it, but a day that we honor the work of the nurses who right now are saving our lives. And so the question asked by one of the members of the press pool to the gathered media, to the nurses and physicians assistants who were there is, do you have enough PPE? We keep hearing about shortages. Trump is telling us that everything's fine. What's the truth? Let me see. Sorry, this is going to be sloppy. I need to find the segment that I want because I've got 5 minutes of audio here that I don't want to play for you. Yeah.
Let's correct. As I talk to my colleagues around the country, certainly there are pockets of areas where PPE is not ideal, but this is an unprecedented time, and the infection
control... I think I went too far. Let me try from here.
And one of the things we did is we sent in the military.
No, not you.
We took...
I want to get this woman. She's a physician's assistant, but she's the one who said that the availability is sporadic, and Trump took exception with that.
But we ended up putting that.
Mr. Luke, are you, and all of you, are you seeing now that the supplies are what they need to be?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's as I talk to my colleagues around the country, certainly there are pockets of areas where PPE is not ideal, but this is an unprecedented time, and the infection control measures that we learned back when we went to school, one gown, one mask for one patient a day or per time, this is a different time, and I've been reusing my N95 mask for a few weeks
a
now.
Few
I just
weeks.
Broke out a new one
a
to
few
come
weeks.
Here just in case I
Hold
need to
on
wear
a
it.
Second.
To answer your question
Hold
earlier,
on.
We're all COVID.
Hold on a second. This is a physician's assistant working in a busy hospital who says she's been using her N95 mask for a few weeks now. Those are designed to be used once with one patient. When the doctor or nurse or medical professional leaves the room, they're supposed to take them off, dispose of them, and then put on another one before going back into that room or to see any other patients. She's been using it for a few weeks now, and listen to how he browbeats her.
COVID-19 free, we were all tested,
yes.
So we're not socially distancing, but we're all negative, and we wouldn't do anything to harm our president, obviously.
Everybody's been tested, you.
Yeah, we were all tested.
I hope the test works, right?
So we're all tested, we're all negative, and so that's why we're not socially distancing and why we're not wearing masks. Certainly, and I've had several tests throughout this whole COVID-19 crisis.
This woman was quite verbose.
I practice in New Orleans at a community health center.
All right, now we're getting to the part, I think.
A four-day-old infant. So PPE has been sporadic. But it's been manageable, and we do what we have to do. We're nurses, and we learn to adapt and do whatever the best thing that we can do for our patients.
But that's not good enough for Trump. I'm going to fast forward to where he chimes in to correct her.
Masks a month in a factory there by the last, because it wasn't put there by the last administration. Sporadic for you, but not sporadic for a lot of other people.
Oh, no, I agree, Mr. President.
Because
absolutely.
I've heard the opposite. I've heard that they are loaded up with gowns now, and initially we had nothing.
Okay, that's the point I wanted to make. He can't even let they're saluting the nurses, and he can't even let this woman who's on the front lines and knows what's going on say, you know, maybe it's not as plentiful as you're saying it is because I've used the same fucking mask for a few weeks now. The masks are supposed to be one use only. And now Donald Trump has all but basically given up on the coronavirus. And meanwhile, he's still attempting to eliminate what's left of the Affordable Care Act. It is going before the Supreme Court. His administration is still fighting to kill the remaining crumbs left over from the Affordable Care Act. And he was asked about that yesterday as well by one of the pool reporters.
Wants to modify its argument before the Supreme Court about invalidating Obamacare to do it. Will you continue with the plan to completely invalidate the ACA, or would you?
So what we want to do is we want to. We're staying. We're not doing anything. In other words, we're staying with the group, with Texas and the group. But just so you understand, Obamacare is a disaster, but we've run it very well, and we've made it barely acceptable. It was a disaster under President Obama, and it's very bad health care. What we want to do is terminate it and give great health care, and we'll have great health care.
He wants to terminate it.
Pre-existing conditions, 100% pre-existing conditions. Now, we've already pretty much killed it because we got rid of the individual mandate. Now, in getting rid of the individual mandate, which was by far the most unpopular thing in Obamacare, that's where for the privilege of paying a fee, you don't have to buy health insurance at a ridiculous price for not good health insurance.
Okay.
It was a terrible
You know what?
Thing.
I'm sorry.
You were mandated to pay something in order not...
I can't listen to him. He gets on my last nerves, and he makes me want to break out into song. So please, sing along, won't you? All right. We got Howie Klein coming up in a couple of minutes, but somebody's calling in. It's an unknown person. Hi, who is this?
Are you speaking to me?
I am speaking to you.
Wow, this is great. Hi, Nicole. This is Steve from Long Island.
Hi, Steve from Long Island. How you hanging in Long Island? You staying safe?
I'm doing great, thank you. I'm a long-time listener, I'm looking forward to Mr. Klein, but I've got something a little more actually important. I hate to ask, but is Randy Rhodes okay?
I have no idea. I know she. I guess she's been off the air all week. What I heard was, and I don't talk to Randy, so I don't really know. But I heard that one of the guys who works with her, maybe came down with COVID, and they were going to disinfect the studio. So beyond that, I have no idea. You know as much as I do.
Because what she has is on a YouTube channel. She has this thing, and she's always followed it. Where if you happen to tune in to the YouTube channel at the time that it's not broadcasting, it would say, it's okay, it's coming back in 22 hours or something. And it's, for example, it says right now, on the 7th, it says, we'll be back May 6th at 3 o'clock p.m.
Well, I heard, because I had asked, you know, the people at Progressive Voices what was up, because I saw she was running Best Of, and they just said she's off for 2 days. Obviously, today's the fourth day, so I don't know.
That's right.
I hope they're all okay. I hope they're okay.
Okay. Well, I sure hope. I'm sure nothing's wrong. I just wondered, because she's never done this, but
I can't help you with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
And who knows? Maybe we'll find out, I guess.
Yes. Right? All right. Let me know. All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
I hope she's okay. Look, that's scary. And, you know, look, I work alone and I work out of my home studio, so I haven't had that issue, right? My daughter and my husband will not let me leave the house. Again, I fought lung cancer a few years ago, and I'm down to like my right lung and about a quarter of my left lung. So they don't want to take any chances. I'm itching to get out. I wanted to go to the store yesterday. They just won't let me. But Randy, you know, when we set up her studio a few years ago, right before I was diagnosed, actually, we were working together at the time. And, you know, she didn't want a home studio. She's got an office in her home. She could have easily done it. But, you know, Randy works with, she's got two producers, and she's got a whole cast of characters. She's got staff. I do everything myself. So, but, you know, we have not kept in touch. We really don't talk. Okay, one more very quick phone call, because I saw this person called in before, but I got to get to Howie Klein. But very quickly, hi, who is this calling from the 415 area code?
Hi, this is Chris in San Francisco. How
hey,
are you,
Chris,
Nicole?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm sheltering in place, too, just like you are.
Good.
And I've just been listening to you, and I just have to say, you know what? I guess I can curse.
Yes, you can.
But Trump doesn't give a fuck about anybody.
No, nobody but himself.
In this country, not even his own family.
No, but himself, I said. Not his family. I don't think he gives a shit about his family.
Yeah.
He just does it.
No,
it's about himself. That's all he cares about.
And I'm glad that you're saying it. And I wish more people would listen to you.
Yeah, me too.
But it's a start. You have to start. It's a grassroots kind of a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to start with the groundswell and then hope that more people, and a lot of people know you. I used to listen to you when you were the producer on Mark and Brian.
Oh, wow. So like, you go way back with me. Yes.
I was in college. I used to listen to you guys that's when they were the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you from back then, your voice, your laugh, everything. And so hearing you now, I only discovered this show like last week.
Oh, wow.
That you were on.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome.
So I'm all of a sudden a brand new listener again.
Yay.
And I'm like, yes.
Oh, I'm so glad you found us.
This is great.
I've been doing this for so many years. I mean, you know, I left L.A. in 2001. I wound up back here in Florida around 2004. And it was soon after that I started doing talk radio. you know, I still love music, but music radio is so, you know, not what it used to be.
Oh, I know. I catch a lot of my music on the internet now, too. I just, like, look things up and have friends recommend things. And most of my family is in South Florida, too, so how, and they are not progressive at all. Unlike me. Mm-hmm. So how is it being a progressive in South Florida?
Well, I'm in Broward County, and Broward County is pretty blue. Broward County is one of the bluest counties in the country, let alone the state. So, you know, if you were to go into northern Florida, it's very red. When you say South Florida, you know, we're split up. It could be Miami, and part of Miami is very Cuban. And they were very Republican, but I don't think they like Trump. Broward is blue, and Palm Beach County is sort of a mix. So, you know, it's not so bad. Yeah, it's not so bad. Anyway, I got to run because we have our standing guest, Howie Klein, coming up in a few minutes. I'm so glad you found the show. Welcome back.
Me too.
And let me tell you something.
I'm glad you're on.
Since you were a listener from my music radio days, I'm going to give you a little hint. There's some really cool content on my website at NicoleSandler.com. If you look on the menu under, you know, the Nicole Sandler Show, there's all kinds of stuff there. And there's one page called The Music Interviews that has a bunch of, as the title suggests, music interviews from my music radio days in Los Angeles. And there's so many treats on there, from Dave Matthews to Steely Dan to Ben Folds 5, to Alanis Morissette. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff on there. So go in your spare time as you're sheltering at home and enjoy.
Thank you.
All right.
And thank you for your show. And I'm going to get back on and listen to the rest of your show now.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. It's good to hear from you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hope to talk to you soon. Bye.
I hope so, too. Oh, see, I'm glad I answered that call. See, I don't have anyone screening phone calls for me. Again, it's a one-woman show here. So, you know, call in. Either I'll pick it up or I won't. That's how it works. But now it is time to get to Howie Klein. And we, you know, well, you got to get in the mood. We need to mix up a batch of Dirty Debbies.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Still doing okay with the isolation and the staying at home and keeping safe?
Definitely. It's no different. I shouldn't say it's no different, but it's not that different for me than it has been normally. I get up at the crack of dawn or a little earlier, write my blog all day. And in the interim of that, or in between things, I try to cook a nice meal for me and my partner.
That's very nice. We've been cooking here, too. And, you know, my daughter, Allison, who you met when, what, she must have been like 12 or something. I'm thinking maybe it wasn't that long ago. But she...
No, whenever you mention her, I always think of her as, you know, being someone who's recently gotten into her teens.
Right.
But I'm sure she's much older than that now.
She turned 21 on Sunday.
Yeah.
And
she kind of had model looks. Is
yes,
she still,
she's gorgeous. She's absolutely stunningly gorgeous. Yeah. She doesn't play it up. She doesn't wear makeup. She mostly wears, you know, T-shirts and jeans and stuff. I think she knows she's pretty, but, you know, doesn't do much with it. Yeah, she's still sort of tomboyish. But anyway, you know, she's a vegetarian. We're not. But between the influence of her and cooking together and hanging out 24/7, we've been a week. I think we had one meat meal this week. I made an amazing veggie pizza last night. So we're having fun with it. I guess you do what you got to do, right?
Yeah. Well, we're both not vegetarians because we eat fish.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, on the other hand, this was the first. Last night was the first time we ate any kind of fish since this whole thing began.
Oh wow!
And that's only because a good friend of mine who lives in Alaska sent me a couple of halibut fillets.
Oh, nice.
And some crab.
Oh.
And I figure out how to deal with the crab because they're in shells.
Yeah.
not in cans. And we'll probably eat the crab this weekend.
Cool.
But generally, we eat vegan meals. Not generally. I mean, every single day except last night.
Yeah. Well, my kid does. So we're moving in that direction, especially with all the horror stories we're hearing about the meat packing plants and stuff. I know that there's been no red flags raised about the safety of the meat. But if they're not testing people and they're making workers come back to these meat packing plants, it makes my stomach turn. So maybe we'll have a lot more vegetarians once this thing is over.
Well, that would be a good thing.
It would be a good thing.
It's healthy for people, and it's also healthy for the environment.
Yeah, absolutely.
The meat industry is not
nasty.
Good for the environment
no,
at all.
It is not. It's not good for anything at all. I want to get into the candidates, as we've been talking about this for a few weeks now, and we always get sidetracked. But before I get there, I have to mention a story to you that is hurting my heart. I'm seeing about the Troubadour in Los Angeles started a GoFundMe page that they may not survive this, as many music venues around the country aren't going to survive this. And I think of all the amazing memories at the Troubadour. That was like my home away from home during the KSCA years. We did so many events there. And then I look back in history from James Taylor and Carole King to Elton John to all these. I mean, Elton John should go in there and give them a check to keep the place open, don't you think?
Oh, that's what everybody is saying. Isn't that weird that everyone fixates on him?
Yeah,
as the
all of them, Jackson Brown. I mean, the whole gang of them. They should all pitch in and save the Troubadour. And I said, the city should make it a landmark and protect it. But that's me. I'm guessing you have some amazing memories from Troubadour and other clubs in L.A.
Sure. I mean, I do have some good memories of the Troubadour, but it wasn't like, when I think about my life spent in clubs, it's more
San
in
Francisco.
San Francisco, yeah. And even New York than in L.A.
Gotcha. All right. Let's. I just had to get that out there. It is a thing. Your favorite live music venue is probably hurting. So I don't know what we can do to help them. We're all in this boat, but it's a thing, as are so many other things where, we're in danger of losing a lot. So anyway, one thing we don't want to lose. How's this for a segue, Howie? In November, we don't want to lose the House of Representatives. And we certainly want to make the Senate more progressive and the White House as well. But, one of the things that we talk about when you join us each week, Howie, is the Blue America PAC. That's your explain for people who don't know about Blue America. We've got a lot of new listeners these days. Explain what Blue America is, how it came about, and what you do.
Yeah, so myself and a couple of other bloggers, now it's John Amato and Digby.
Mm-hmm.
We started a PAC. So in other words, a vehicle to raise money for progressive candidates, particularly progressive members of Congress,
mm-hmm.
and people running for Congress. And we've been doing that. We've raised over $6 million so far, and our average donation is around 40-some-odd dollars, more like 41 or 42.
Mm-hmm.
And the money, it's not like the money goes to us and we divvy it up. It's not, that would be the Emily's List model, where a lot of that money sort of gets stuck on the way to the candidates and never reaches the candidates. What we do is we encourage people to give the money directly to the candidates. So so if you donate $45, the candidate gets $45.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go through us to then write a check to them. Some people do donate some money to us, and we use that money to do independent expenditures. And if we don't come up with an independent expenditure, then we just donate it to the candidates ourselves. But that's a very small, minor amount of money. What we don't do is take salaries mm-hmm. for ourselves or pay expenses for ourselves or do anything for ourselves. This is not for us. This is for getting Congress to be a better place. That's all it's about. And so, you know, we you know, like just for example, about 15 minutes ago, I was on the phone with the manager of a woman running in Tennessee, and she, you know, she just wanted to make sure she got everything right that I said to her yesterday when we spoke. So she asked her manager to call me and, you know, just check a couple of the things that we had talked about. And it was, we had a very pleasant conversation.
Good. Is this someone that you guys are endorsing?
Yes, it is someone that we're endorsing. It's for in a state legislative race.
Oh, now, wow. I didn't know you did that.
We endorse a lot of people in the state legislature. The only reason that we do it, there are two reasons why we would do it. One would be because the person running would be so unbelievably great, like not just good or very good, not just great, but unbelievably great, that we feel like we really want to help them. Mm-hmm. So that would be the case, for example, with Lee Carter in Virginia. So, but this particular woman fits the, she will be really great if she gets elected, but she fits the other category also, which is, a progressive bench to beat a blue dog.
Right.
So her district is part of, Jim Cooper's district. Jim Cooper is the blue dog in Nashville. He was originally from a different part of Tennessee. And when he realized that conservative Democrats could no longer hold districts like that and that they were going to turn into Republican districts, he moved to Nashville into an all-blue district.
Wow.
So the Nashville district could never be won by a Republican. It's very, very blue, just like the Memphis district is.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two blue districts in Tennessee now. And the Nashville district shouldn't have someone like him. The Nashville district should have a progressive. He's someone who is a reactionary who votes with the Republicans and who's and even worse than that, he's always fighting Democrats on, and says like all the blue dogs, if you pass this race, I'm going to lose my seat. And he's lying. His district is far more conservative than him. And when he says something like that, he's thinking of his old district, not his current district. Anyway, this this woman's name is Heidi Campbell.
Okay.
And she's running in a district that is mostly in the northern part of Nashville, and it includes some of the suburbs north of Nashville as well. And it's held by a Republican now, and she can flip it. And
okay.
I think she will.
All right. I don't even have the date of when the Nashville primary is. So, you know, I spent some time today researching the revised calendar because so many of the primary races were postponed due to the virus. So I do have some in front of me, and I see that the next election day is May 12th in Nebraska. And Kara Eastman is a Blue America endorsed candidate running for Congress there, running for the Democratic nomination. She ran last time, didn't she?
Yes, she did. She ran last time, and she beat a very, very, very reactionary Democrat, again, a blue dog. And he's not going to run against her this time because she beat him so badly. So he has his wife running against
her.
Oh, no. So anyway, she'll beat the wife as well. And then she'll go on, hopefully, and beat Don Bacon. So Don Bacon took a public pledge to never disagree with Trump. That how about that? A public pledge that he will never disagree with Trump.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine if you had a congressman like that?
Well, I have a governor like that.
That's right, you do.
Yeah.
And because of that, a lot more Floridians are going to wind up getting COVID-19 than needed.
Yep.
But in the case of Don Bacon, he is a reactionary Republican. He's terrible, and the district is not a reactionary district. It's a good, solid swing district. Obama won it, I think, one of the times he won. He ran. It's always within a point or two or three. You know, it's always close, whether the Republican wins or the Democrat wins. And Kara lost by a tiny percentage. It was one of the closest races last time. And now she's known. That was the first time she had ever run for a district-wide race, and she wasn't known, and he was, and now she is known. And there's no reason to think that she won't win this race if she gets the nomination, which I think she will. You know, I got to say this, and I think I've said it before, but I can't overemphasize it. Very, very few people win a primary the first time they try.
Right.
It's almost impossible because they're not known and the other person is known. It just doesn't happen. It takes two cycles. Or sometimes
AOC was the fluke, right?
Yes, she was. AOC was the fluke. And there are flukes occasionally, but it's very, very rare. And you know, let's be real. AOC is a really, unique person. But, you know, but they're all unique, of course, in a way. But she's, like, mind-bogglingly unique. But, you know, you take Donna Edwards. It took two times before she got in.
Yeah.
Alan Grayson, it took two times before he got in. And it's generally that way. So, you know, it doesn't make me nervous that Kara didn't win the first time. I think she's going to win this time. I think that will be something we're cheering about. Just like a few weeks ago, we were cheering because Marie Newman won her primary.
Right.
And but it was the second time she went for it. This is a very, very, very similar situation.
Awesome. Now, so that's happening this coming Tuesday, May 12th. The following Tuesday, May 19th, is Oregon's primary. Now, Oregon always votes by mail, so there's no delay here. It's business as usual there.
Right.
But
Oregon is one of the rare states where it's all by mail.
Right.
And it doesn't have anything to do with the pandemic, although the pandemic is proving that they were right and the rest of the country should have followed along. But Oregon, Washington, and a bunch of other states in the West do that, where they've gotten rid of the whole thing with vote, you know, going to vote in person. It's all by mail. And it works very well. And there's nobody who's been accusing any stealing going on. There are both Republican and Democratic states that do this. And, you know, so their primary was scheduled for a week from Tuesday anyway, and nothing changed.
Right. Yep. Business as usual. But we have a good candidate there in Mike Gamba.
We have a great candidate in one of the districts. So currently, he's the mayor of Milwaukee. So that's Milwaukee with an IE, not Milwaukee
okay.
with two E's.
The other Milwaukee.
So, small city south of Portland. And Mark Gamba is his name, G-A-M-B-A. And he is a real progressive. And he has been, you know, and acting as close as you can and do that as a mayor, all of the kinds of progressive policies that we like. He's a real fighter. I mean, you know, talk can be cheap. And people can say things, and then they get to Congress, and, hey, remember what you were saying? No, I don't remember. you know, so Mark is not that kind of guy. Mark is the kind of guy who is...
Mark or Mike? Mike.
No, Mark.
Mark.
Mike is his...
Okay.
So there are two Gambas. Mark Gamba is running. Mike Gamba is the brother.
Ah, okay. I got it wrong.
I sometimes get it mixed up, and he always gets angry. But it's definitely Mark.
Got it. All right, I fixed my notes. All right.
So he's awesome. Mark is absolutely awesome. He is, you know, he's a Bernie-crat or a Bernie fighter, and he'll make an amazing congressperson. I mean, the first couple of times I spoke with him, he kept saying how he wants to, his goal is to be the first man in the what is that called again? That Ilhan and Rashida.
The squad, the first male member of the squad.
He wants to be the first male member of the squad.
All right.
You know, he's not a guy who's going to sit back and just vote right. That's not him. He's going to be a guy who's pushing Congress from the inside, and that's what we need. When we have a Democratic majority, we don't want just people like Steny Hoyer, a very conservative and corrupt Democrat who's owned by K Street lobbyists. We don't want people like that setting the agenda. We need people like Gamba and people like AOC setting the agenda. And the more of them that there are in Congress, the more they're going to fight. And he's running against one of the worst members of the Democratic caucus, who is a dreadful blue dog, but not even like a kind of bad blue dog. He's as bad as they come blue dog, a guy named Kurt Schrader.
Oh.
And Kurt Schrader recently was the only Democrat to vote against a labor union initiative for a a living wage. I mean, wow. You know, hey, we have Republicans for that. We don't need Democrats to do that. And he's bad on everything. There is no issue that he's good on. So just think of any issue, he's bad on it. You know, he's a multimillionaire, and he didn't ever have to work a day in his life. He inherited that money from his parents, who were in the pharmaceutical business. And, you know, that's the perspective that he has. And Mark is very, very different. So that's a really important race for us. So those are the next two that are coming up. They're really a big deal.
May 12th, May 19th, Nebraska and Oregon. And I'll put all this on my blog at NicoleSandler.com, the calendar and these candidates who Blue America has endorsed that we're talking about. The next race you have, next day that you have candidates in a race is a big, it's almost like a mini Super Tuesday, and where Delaware, Indiana, Maryland, Montana, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, all rescheduled their previously scheduled primaries to the state. But you, Blue America has candidates in Indiana, Jim Harper, in Maryland, Michaela Wilkes, and Montana, Tom Winter. Yeah?
We have candidates in Indiana.
Two.
So one of them is in a totally blue district, and that is Jim Harper. The other one is kind of in a red open district. So the Republican congresswoman from that district in the suburbs, rural areas north of Indianapolis. She's in that district. Her name is Jennifer Christie. So Jennifer is awesome. She's great, and it's a real tough district. She's running against a conservative Democrat who the DCCC and their allies are pushing. And then even if she wins that race, it's going to be really, really difficult to take a seat like that back from the Republicans. Hmm. The other Democrat who's running that we've endorsed is a completely different story. This is Jim Harper, and he's where she's in the Indianapolis area, which is pretty red outside of the city itself. He's in the Chicago area.
Oh.
So it's the extreme northwest part of the state. There are three counties. There are three fully Democratic counties. This is a blue district. This district does not, under any circumstances, vote for Republicans on any level. You know, whoever wins the primary is automatically going to be the next member of Congress. So there is a kind of a conservative Democrat who's a member of Congress now, and he's retiring. And he's been there forever. And Jim is running. There are also some, you know, typically conservative and corrupt Democrats trying to get into that seat. And Jim is the only real progressive who has a shot to win. There's a couple of other minor candidates who are progressives who aren't raising any money and not making a real effort other than, you know, on Twitter.
Right.
But he's, you know, he's for real, and he would make a great member of Congress. If he wins this primary, he's going to be another person who's going to be there fighting for the Green New Deal, fighting for livable wage, fighting for Medicare for all, fighting for free state colleges and universities. I mean, he's our kind of candidate, and if he wins the primary, he will be in Congress.
Awesome. Okay, that's Jim Harper in Indiana.
Yeah, so you also said that day is Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very similar situation, except it's not a blue district. However, I feel that Indiana, and I'm one of the few who feels this way, that Indiana is going to have a real wave in November. And, you know, I've been writing about it a lot. I have some reasons why I feel that way. And I feel, you know, the congressional seat, which takes up the whole state, and this is the last time that'll happen because Indiana just had a burst of population and they're going to split the congressional delegation into two seats. But right now it's one seat. Our candidate is named Tom Winter.
Mm-hmm.
Tom is a state legislator. He's a young state legislator in a Trump district. So he won a Trump district.
Wow.
That is mostly rural, a little bit of suburban, but mostly rural district west of Missoula in the very western part of the state. And, you know, he's a very good, strong candidate. He's a young guy who takes the progressive position on things as a matter of course. Now, he's not stupid, so he knows that not everybody takes it as a matter of course. But for him,
you know, stuff like women's choice and racial equality and LGBTQ equality, those kinds of things, that's a jumping off point. That's not what you're getting to. That's just natural. And, you know, what's interesting about him, of course, is he goes beyond that into the things like Medicare for All and Green New Deal. So he's, again, you know, a real wonderful kind of candidate. Of course, the DCCC has their own nothing candidate who's running in that race. She lost last time. You know, she's not a good candidate. She's also way more conservative than you need. Their attitude there is that, well, if you run a Democrat who's kind of like a Republican, people will vote for you. And that's never true. If you run a Democrat who's like a Republican, everyone votes for the Republican. What do mm-hmm. they need at pretending?
Of course.
Which is
right.
She is.
Gotcha.
So if he wins this, I think he's going to wind up in Congress. And the reason for that is because there's also a Senate race there. And, you know, I've been sort of arguing, I don't know if the people are hearing it, but the major prognosticators, you know, whether it's the Cook Report or the Sabato's crystal ball, all of them are rating this as they're rating it as a lean Republican district, and the Senate race as a lean Republican seat. And that's foolish because it isn't. You can't really say it's lean Democrat necessarily yet, but it's definitely a toss-up.
Okay.
And the reason for that is there is a very unpopular incumbent Republican senator who no one cares about, mm-hmm. who's just a Trump enabler. And then there's a very, very, very popular Democratic governor who's running against him.
Bullock.
So the top of the ticket is going to be this gubernatorial. The top of the ticket is going to be this
Governor
Senate
Bullock.
Race.
Right, right.
Yeah. So Governor Bullock, who's popular, and Steve Daines, the Republican, who's unpopular,
mm-hmm.
and that is going to bring out lots and lots of Democrats. It's going to bring out independents who favor Democrats, and I think it'll have an impact down ballot as well. So I think that. Bullock will win. I think he will be a senator. I think that Daines will be defeated. The Republicans
right.
are smarter than the the consultants who talk about this, because the Republicans were aware how much trouble Daines is in. Trump is not popular there. And I'll tell you something. In this COVID-19 thing, Bullock is playing it very, 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 very well. And Montana is doing second best of all the states in the
really?
Country.
Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, good for him. No, I'm glad he decided to run, because when he dropped out of the presidential race, he said he wasn't interested in running for the Senate. Thankfully, he changed his mind.
I wouldn't call him a conservative Democrat. Mm-hmm. I would call him, you know, sort of like
a Montana
right in the middle
Democrat.
Kind of Democrat. he's exactly like what Obama was.
Mm-hmm.
When Obama was in the Senate. That's exactly what Steve Bullock is. So he's not, you know, really, really, really progressive, and mm-hmm. he's not really, really, really conservative. He's in the middle there.
Gotcha. All right. You know what, Howie Klein? We've got a
bunch.
America,
by the way, we didn't endorse him. I hope he wins, but he's not. He's not.
He's not a blue
candidate.
America, right? Because he's not a progressive. He's a Montana conservative, kind of, sort of.
In Montana, he's progressive.
Right.
He's a progressive for Montana. But we're not looking for that.
No.
We're looking for a progressive for America. That's why I said I hope he wins. I think he'll make a decent senator. Is he going to be Bernie? No. Is he going to be Elizabeth Warren? No. He's not going to be that. He's going to be someone who's just right for Montana, leaning a little left of center. That's it.
Right.
Good enough. Them, but not for blue America.
Right. But the name that people want to know from Montana is the man running for the Democratic nomination for the congressional seat, Tom Winter, who is a blue America endorsed candidate. So,
exactly.
Howie Klein, we've reached the end of the hour. We still have a bunch more.
Can we get through half the state?
I know. So, we're going to continue next week. We got through the next few weeks. I mean, May 19th and May 22nd. We just started on June 2nd, but we're going to go into August.
Michaela.
I know.
Who's running against Steny Hoyer, but we'll do it next week.
We'll do it next week. Michaela Wilkes, I know, is a great candidate. So so she's primarying Steny Hoyer. Someone in the chat room just a little while ago said, we need to replace the old guard in the Democratic Party. That's what a lot of this is about, getting progressives in, getting rid of the old school people. Nancy Pelosi, have you endorsed her her opponent?
Yeah, Down with Tyranny has.
Okay.
I need to discuss it for Blue America, but we have Down with Tyranny endorsed Shahid Buttar.
He's great.
And in California, we have a jungle primary, remember? Mm-hmm. So they both won. So this is no Republican in the race. It's Democrat versus Democrat.
It's him against Pelosi. Okay, in the general. Got it. All right, Howie Klein.
Yeah. Tyranny endorsed, and we collect money for him.
Good. Oh, cool. All right. Well, thank you for that clarification. And we'll regroup next week. Not like we got anything better to do. Thank you, Howie Klein.
Thank you.
Bye. And with that, we're done for today. Tomorrow is Friday, so we'll be back then. We'll do more quarantine calling tomorrow, and we'll see what else the day brings. Thank you for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and please stay safe. See you tomorrow. Bye.